evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFO Undercover. Like Natasha says, I am your wonderful and handsome and sexy host, Joe Montalvo. Yeah, I know how y'all like that plug, huh? I want to wish everybody a good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are on our beautiful blue planet. These days, we cross every time zone, so it's always pertinent to wish everybody a good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tonight's guest is going to be Melinda Leslie. Most of y'all should know, Melinda's been a frequent guest on the show. I like having her on because we work in the same areas in abduction and Milab and rehab and things like that, which we will get into in a few minutes. She has a nice new pretty website up these days. You can find it. It's listed on the virtual audience on Pal Talk. I believe it's also on my Facebook and MySpace page. And it's also on the iCar pages. On the link, it says Melinda Leslie. And you can go there, and it'll take you right to it. It's also on the UFO Undercover page because she's tonight's guest. So you can go there, click. She's got a new article out, which I'm going to get her to talk with y'all a little bit about soon. She was just on Coast to Coast, what was it, 30 days ago, huh, Melinda?
Yes, just a month ago. It was on the 13th of August.
But anyway, welcome to the show. The audience shouldn't, but you know what, just for old time's sake, let me get you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself and why you got involved in all of this.
Oh, goodness. Where do I start?
Take your time.
Well, it started with, it started with having a sighting out at Area 51 back in 1989 when it was first, when that whole story of Bob Lazar and Area 51 and test flights going on there and all that information was breaking. And Lazar was just going public with, John Lear and Gene Huff and Bill Cooper and the other people that were involved back then, and eventually George Knapp. So that story was breaking, and there was a radio show talking about it, and people were going out there, and the radio show planned to take a couple buses of people out. Anyways, I went out, not with the radio show, but just some friends of mine and myself drove out there from Southern California out to, you know, Nevada, up Area 51. And we had some sightings, and those sightings unlocked something in my memory. We ended up going back 2 weeks later and about a month after that, so in like a two-month period, we'd gone out there three times and had great sightings every time. And that unlocked something in my memory, which started to bring forth dreams and memories of having had some abductions. And I thought I was losing my mind. I sought the help of a therapist because I said, well, obviously I must be going crazy, and sought the help of a therapist and learned that, in fact, I was having abductions. And a couple years later, I ended up having an experience involving military personnel. And then I had a couple others kind of in a short period of time, so that caused me to start investigating what was that going on with me and could that really be happening. And then I met other people who had it happen and was introduced and became friends with Carla Turner, and she inspired me to keep moving and go forward with the research, and Leah Haley and Kim Carlsberg and Kate Wilson and a bunch of other people, and now the rest is history, and I'm known as a researcher in that, what's known as the MILAB subject, or MILAB, which just means it's an acronym for military abduction, which just means a covert ops and government military, you know, covert ops involvement in abductions, in the lives of abductees, and in harassment, surveillance, and reabduction of alien abductees. And I've been researching that ever since. And then early on, when I found out I was an alien abductee, even before the MILAB stuff, a researcher, fellow abductee by the name of Penny Harper, was running a lecture series in Southern California called Euforum, and had me on a panel to speak. And that was kind of the first time I ever went public, and much prodding and poking by Penny to do that. I was on a panel, and then it was pretty well received when I was on this panel with people with experiences that a couple months later she said, let's have you back to do a lecture by yourself. And again, with much prodding and poking by her, I ended up, doing a lecture on my own. And then I got asked to lecture for this other organization in Long Beach, and And the rest is history there. I went public with my alien abduction experiences. But it was a couple years into it that I then figured out I had the covert ops involvement and started on that, and have been ever since then, you know, counseling abductees, investigating and researching the subject and cases, dealing with both alien abduction and the military involvement, both. And that brings us to today.
Now, let me ask you this now. I know, and you've already told me this, but for the audience sake, what was it that triggered the military thing? I mean, what was it that you seen, heard, smelled, sniffed, or just woke up one day and said, what the hell?
Well, the first one, and I didn't really come to the full realization of what it meant, was I had an alien abduction while driving with two friends, two male friends of mine, two of my absolute closest and best friends that I remain absolutely that close with to today. We were driving over a mountain road. We were actually on our way to do a UFO investigation. We would occasionally go out to known hot spots and stuff like that to have a sighting. And we were going out to investigate an area, actually, an area out here in Southern California known as the Tehachapi area, out past Lancaster and Palmdale on Highway 14 out that way. We were driving, you could take a shortcut from like the Sierra Madre, Pasadena area up over the hill. I think the highway's called N2, and anyway, so we were going up over that way. We had driven it before. We knew how long it should take. And suddenly we had a significant period of missing time, of at least an hour and a half and maybe as long as about 3 hours, or, you know, roughly, let's say 2 hours of missing time. You know, it was rather significant. And the realization that we had a bunch of physical symptoms and emotional things and things going on that led us to think that maybe something had happened. We're in somewhat denial about it that night. And arguing and kind of, you know, a lot of emotional stuff going on. And over a period of days and weeks to follow, each of us had some amount of conscious memory of the experience. And then we each got regressed by the same hypnotherapist, but separately, you know, separately over a number of weeks or even months it took to get all our regressions done. And the therapist at one point confided, I think, in me first and then in the others, that we'd each seen a man in military uniform present in the experience. It was predominantly an alien abduction, but we remembered this man in military, a human in military uniform, standing in the background, very much like he was monitoring what was going on, that he appeared to be there in some official capacity. And she said all three of us had reported seeing this guy. And that was the first time, and I didn't know what to make of that, nor did the other people. It was interesting, and we were fairly certain that this was not someone else being abducted along with us, you know, that this was someone, again, who seemed to be fully conscious, fully present, and very much monitoring what was going on, yet very much separate from the procedure, in that he was off to the side, standing there the whole time, and the aliens did the whole thing. So we each had some separate procedures done and some tests and some physical stuff and, you know, everything that would fall under the realm of fairly normal alien abduction kind of thing. And it was just weird that we had seen this guy. And the therapist didn't know what to make of it either. But it was what it was. And then over that period of time, I was having some low-grade harassment and surveillance stuff. And again, you know, a lot of abductees, what happened to me is typical for the cases I investigate and people I talk to. A lot of people kind of have this happen before they wrap their head around what it may mean, you know. It's not unusual for people to see people in military uniform present in their experiences, or to start to have the harassment surveillance, to start to have phone monitoring and weird, you know, clicks on the phone and sounding like someone picking up another line, and have black helicopter harassment, or have your mail tampered with, you know, correspond with a researcher sending stuff back and forth. And, of course, back then, that was the early 90s, we used to do a lot more of that. There wasn't as much electronic transfer of information as there is now, by any means. So, you know, you sent more stuff in the mail. And, you know, having that stuff tampered with, you know, sending somebody something or having a researcher send you something and only getting half of it and obviously showing that the envelope had been reopened or something, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I was having these kind of things happen and hadn't quite put my finger on it. And then met, you know, I'd have to really think back because I'm not sure who I met or heard first, if that was Carla or if that was Leah or, you know, what it was back then. But, you know, something that had come up that I realized other people were having similar stuff. And that other experience had happened with myself and the two friends. It happened in 91. And then in 1993, I had an experience in August of 93 and then November of 93. So relatively close to each other. The August of 93, I remembered being taken to an underground base and having a medical procedure done for the most part, and which had now since then I've verified through a couple different means and stuff what was going on then. But back then, I just, you know, I had the memory of it. I wasn't sure what to make of it. I thought, could this be a cover memory for an alien stuff? I went to the regression therapist that at that point I was working quite a bit with, and she was a fully licensed psychotherapist, actually a doctor, doctor of psychotherapy, and worked with her and found, you know, determined that, in fact, I was having experiences at the hands of some humans. And then in November of 93, I had another experience where I was taken by humans, but this time I was interrogated. Now, both of those experiences, I was not taken with other people. I was taken just by myself. One of those experiences also involved some aliens present, and the other one didn't at all, which seemed very odd to me at the time to not have any alien presence involved in it. And one of them only had it at the end. It appeared to be a fully human experience, except at the very end, I believe I was handed over to aliens, and then they actually brought me back home. but the other experience being fully human, and I had both a lot of conscious memory of these experiences and regression. And then over the years, had some subsequent regressions, and because, you know, there were parts that I was blocked on or parts I wanted to know more. So maybe years later, I would get regressed again just to really try to, you know, flesh out what exactly was happening and what had happened, like, you know, remembering a great amount of detail but having some chunk of it missing and trying to get at that. And then in the midst of all this, I ended up, an old roommate of mine from back when in 89 and 90, when I was first finding out I was having alien stuff and then had the experience in 91, during that whole period I lived with two roommates. One of them I had kind of gotten out of touch with, ran into her at a bookstore, long story short there, got back in touch with her, and at one point I went over to her house where we were sitting there and I'm telling her, like, you know, she's saying, did you keep going forward with your abduction stuff and what's come of that? And I was sharing with her where my research had gone into this other stuff. And she suddenly said, oh, I'm so glad you know that now. And I said, I know what? And she proceeded to share something that happened back in 1990 where for a brief period she had a 14-year-old, she had a couple of kids, but they didn't live with us. But for a brief period, her 14-year-old daughter came to live with us, kind of a long story of the 14-year-old going through kind of a transition period and needed to have a place to stay, wasn't getting along with her dad, had lived with her dad, wasn't getting along, and the parents were separated. And so she moved in with us and lived with her mom. And they shared a room. And I was told then, so this is, you know, years later, I was told back in 1990 that they had witnessed military men in my room shouting orders at me in the middle of the night and my pleading and crying with them, no, no, and that they said, you're definitely having an argument with what sounded like guys in the military. giving you orders, speaking very firm, and they couldn't understand who I'd had over in the middle of the night and why one of my friends would have been over there, A, in the middle of the night, and B, you know, speaking military lingo to me, you know,
yeah.
kind of a thing. And they were awoken by this, and it ended up scaring the 14-year-old so bad, and apparently there had been a series of things that they had kind of witnessed. So if anything, they were aware I was going through something and that some other stuff was happening with it, like our phones and maybe our mail, and, you know, anyways, it scared them. And the 14-year-old moved out, and I was told she missed her dad and wanted to go back and live with her dad. And that's what I was told at the time. Well, here it is years later that, you know, my old roommate, her mom, is telling me, oh, no, no. The reason she moved out is she was so scared by what was happening to you. And I was like, what? No, no, no. You know, I always thought she wanted just to go back and live with her dad. And she said, well, that's what we told you because we didn't want to tell you that we're really scared by what was happening to you.
You were scaring the hell out of her.
Yeah, yeah. And they, she kind of said, and I've lost contact with her again, and I'd like to clarify, because she kind of made it sound like maybe they had witnessed this more than once. I remember going into detail about the one particular experience, but I'm thinking that there was maybe a series of things. But regardless, I remember, you know, that she went into some detail about the one time that was, you know, kind of like, you know, really frightened them. And I had no memory of that. I had no memory of that, and still don't. You know, I'm left. I mean, she was adamant that they'd witnessed this, and you know, but I'm left having to take her word for it that experience had happened. But given the thing in 91, and then given the two in 93, and now I've had a total of about, if I count, okay, those four experiences, and then I've had a few more, I've had a total of about seven experiences involving military involvement.
You know, when I get a chance, I meant to tell you this yesterday when I talked to you, and I forgot, and I'm not going to get into it on the show because it'll take up too much time, but I was just recently in Gulf Breeze last weekend,
mm-hmm.
and we took a 12-hour trip. I make this as quick as I can. We got in the car. We were going to go spend a night in Gulf Breeze. Got in a car. We drive to stop in Mississippi first. We went by the casino. I got from my house to Mississippi in under 50 minutes, and this is at best, at 80 miles an hour, at best, an hour 45-minute ride. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Didn't think about it though, because I was, you know, I was doing stuff. Didn't think about it. Got to Pensacola from there, and actually to Destin, Florida, from there in under 2 hours. Now, it's kind of weird because it's 3 hours. All of a sudden, it's 7-8 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, we decide we're gonna, you know, we said screw it, we're gonna leave. We're gonna go down to the casino. Because it was raining its butt off in Florida. I mean, just raining nonstop. And so we're going to just go back to Mississippi and then either spend a night there or drive home, because home's only an hour from Mississippi. Anyway, make a long story short, we get back. We left Pensacola at 9:30, got to the Silver Slipper Casino in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi at 10 o'clock. This is a three-hour drive.
And then, how long did it take?
Half hour.
Hmm.
So we were both...
And it should have taken 3 hours?
Yeah, it should have taken 3 hours. So at this point, we're both kind of weird.
Game time.
Hmm. We're both kind of weirded out a little bit, but we didn't think about it. So we're going to the casino, I get a cup of coffee, we played a little while. So we leave the casino at like, I don't know, 12:15, 12:30. And we start driving home. And now from the Silver Slipper Casino, if I go the back way through the swamp and all, it's about an hour drive. We got home in under 20 minutes. So every time we got in the car, we gained anywhere from a half an hour to 3 hours of time. Plus, my car, and I got my credit card to back this up, because that's how I always use my credit card when I travel, I only bought gas one time in 12 hours. Now, don't get me wrong, my car gets good gas mileage. Probably about 400 miles to a tank, but not that good a gas mileage. And it only had a half a tank when I left, so I know I filled it up in Mississippi, and I'd have had to fill it up at least one more time coming home. Especially driving at those speeds and make up that kind of time. It's just... But anyway, when we get some free time, I'm going to call you and talk to you about it. I don't want to hog it.
What do you think happened?
Oh, I got some ideas. I'm not... Well, being where one of the locations...
I mean, because that's game time, and I would lean definitely towards...
I'm leaning towards
alien abduction experience because of the game time... scenario.
Yeah, game time. Yeah, because as far as I know, they haven't done that in military unless.
No, exactly.
Unless they just took us in New Orleans and they were screwing our memory the whole time. I don't know how they could have pulled that off. Which is, I'm not ruling out anything at this time. But I've been working on memories. Got some bits and pieces.
Yeah, but I still would lean.
I'm leaning towards ET. Now, there might have been some other intervention because there was some weird thing. I keep seeing uniforms in Florida, but I don't know what that's about, and it might be crisscrossing with something else that happened in Florida. So, and that's another thing. When we're in familiar territory like that, I've got to be real careful because I'll catch myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trained at this, and I still catch myself. You know, whoa, Joe, wait, no, that's a memory from another experience. So I've got to stop. And it's hard to distinguish them sometimes. But anyway, enough about all that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've had that happen. They kind of
when I in a couple weeks
when I get
some free time and I work through it, I'll call you and talk to you about it. But no, I just wanted to say it because I meant to tell you yesterday and I forgot, and I wanted to make sure I told you. Now we got all kind of questions coming. First off, no, she's not crazy and she's honest and she's telling you the truth. You scared the hell out of some poor guy, and where the hell is he? Hold on.
No.
where is he? And Switzerland. You scared the hell out of him, too. He said, no, governments would never do that. American government would never do that. And I typed back to him, well, you're an American. He said, well, no, and that's when he said he was from. And that's why I was being so quiet. I was talking to a couple people while I was listening to you. And you scared the hell out of him, and we'll leave it at that. He thinks he's a contactee, but now he doesn't even want to think that because he's scared the government's going to come get him. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's important to say. You were probably about to say it, that just, you know, you can have contactee or alien abduction experiences, and it doesn't mean the government is going to be involved. While it does happen to a lot of people, it's certainly, still a relatively small percentage of contact cases have any of this kind of involvement. It starts off with low-grade harassment and surveillance, so you're going to have some warning with harassment and surveillance stuff long before you have a re-abduction, long before they pick you up in any way. And so that's even a smaller percentage. So, half of all abductees or one-third of all abductees probably have harassment surveillance. But, only another third of those, actually even less than that, only a small percentage of those people have harassment surveillance will then also have the re-abduction. So I can say it definitely happens to a lot of people. There's no reason to think if you're an abductee, therefore it's going to happen. It has become increasingly clear to me that they're only interested in certain types of cases, and they're only going to be interested, as you put it, Joe, in an advanced abductee, an advanced contactee, which doesn't mean that the person or their case is better. In any way, it just means they've had more stuff happen. So you would already know you're an abductee. You would have a whole variety of a lifetime of experiences. You've probably been shown technology by the aliens. You've had extensive medical stuff done. You've been, you've had hybrid children handed to you more than once. You know, this kind of thing. You have a variety of the more in-depth parts of this experience before you're going to have any military involvement. Now, if you are an abductee and you match all those other things I just said, and you're an advanced case, and you've been shown technology, and you've sat in a computer, and you've been shown alien languages and alien math, and you've operated stuff with your mind, and you've been presented everything from hybrid babies when they were little to now those same folks as adults, are being presented to you, either A, you already have the military stuff going on and you just aren't aware of it, or either A, you're aware of it, B, you're having it not going on and you're not aware of it, or C, you're about to have it happen. Because if you're an advanced case, they're going to be interested in you, and you probably already have it going on.
And you probably do, that's the thing. Well, but it was what made me first come up with the theory was somebody said, you've got all that information from ICAR. But in all honesty, the theory about the advanced contactees became because of people like you and Leah and Kay and a few others that had been on my show, and I was sitting there thinking one afternoon, what do they all have in common? And then it dawned on me, I said, well, hell, they've all been on a radio show. They're known to have these kind of experiences. They're advanced contactees who have been talking about it for years.
Mm-hmm.
And they must know, somehow they must have a sense, or somebody has a sense, when a contactee is going to come out of their shell, because I see government does.
Well, it's not about going public. Of course,
yeah.
Early on in the research, I thought it was. It happened
yeah.
to people who were going public, and that made sense.
Yeah, that's about bad.
That's how they knew, you know. But then I had cases that I've worked with that have never gone public and have been very private about their experiences, yet have had the military involvement. So it turns out that well, if someone has gone public, they would certainly know.
Yeah.
But it does happen to people who haven't gone public. So it shows me that there's more to it. But now I'm also realizing, just as alien abductions runs, in fact, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but alien abduction runs in family histories. There's a genealogy to abduction, that it tends to run in families. If you're an abductee, probably your parents were. If you're an abductee and you have kids, your kids will be, that kind of thing. And that's so prevalent. I mean, it is, granted, some people don't always know, but it's so prevalent, and a lot of people, even if they don't know, and then they start to look into it or investigate their family or ask family members, they find out that it is. It's just, it's so prevalent and so common, it's such a high percentage of cases have it in a family history. And I'm finding that this also runs in family histories.
Yeah.
This is something I've just started to realize recently, but I have this in some cases, and so I'm starting to say, well, that would make sense. If alien abduction runs in family histories, and you know, that this would too, that they are. So in other words, if you're having military involvement in your stuff, you might want to look into, okay, are other family members of yours also abductees, and did they also have military stuff prior to you? And then I also have other patterns that come up in the research from family history kinds of things. Involvements in family histories of the MyLab abductees with things like a family member being involved in aerospace, a family member being involved in military intelligence, being involved in NASA, being involved in high level, like anything of a secret nature, CIA, NSA, I said NASA, military intelligence. I'm pulling a blank with all, you know, but those kinds of things.
All different agencies, yeah.
You know, those kind in aerospace and stuff too. So these kind of patterns come up a lot. Way too much for me to ignore. So obviously, there's some kind of monitoring of those families, and if someone with that family background then has a child who's an abductee, well, again, probably that abduction stuff runs in that family, but regardless, there seems to be a monitoring or looking at those kinds of families and people with involvement. So if some family history of yours suggests some involvement in intelligence work and in space-related things, that would suggest that there's a possibility, because I've come up with that so much in my cases. Another thing that comes up a little bit along with that is secret societies, but that seems to be in combination with some of the others.
Yeah.
So it seems to be a combination of stuff, but I have a whole pattern that comes up in my cases that suggests that, you know, there'd be a family history to them monitoring and selecting people from a particular family or family line, and just like with the alien stuff. So so that's come up. And then the other thing is they're tracking. When I say they, I mean those in the covert ops that are managing the, you know, ET info and technology management, whoever that is, you know, we call MJ-12 or call it whatever, you know, but to say it's probably compartmentalized, it's probably many groups, there's probably a lot of overlap. But those folks involved in managing ET information are monitoring craft coming and going a lot better than we've ever given them credit for. I think I've come across information that not only do a lot of satellites pick up UFOs, but that they have actually built and placed satellites specifically for tracking them. So I think that the space around our planet and what goes on is actually much better monitored and known than I think most people have ever really given them credit, that they really do monitor it and are really more on top of it. And I think for that reason, you know, being that abductions tend to repeat, being that they tend to happen more in particular areas, you know, that they're monitoring those areas, that craft are coming and going more frequently from an area, the craft may be coming and going from a particular location more frequently. And so I think they're going to know, based upon all that, that there's a high percentage of abductees in that area. If not, they'd actually even be able to pinpoint precisely where someone is being abducted. And I have just so much information supporting the fact that, that they're monitoring it. Like I said, it better than anyone has ever given them credit, that they really do know what's coming and going. And so they, therefore, it's like, okay, well, they can figure out that someone's being an abductee, and then if they're looking for a more of a, you know, as we were saying before, a quality abduction case, they're either going to look and know, does it run in their family? They might see if that individual is pursuing help in some way. Are they working with a therapist? Are they working with an abduction researcher or with someone in ufology? You know, are they talking about it on the phone? Are they emailing about it? You know, this kind of thing. They might be able to then somewhat, you know to the degree that somebody is involved in the subject and how deep of a case. And that's without that person being fully public, you know.
Because a lot of people don't go public. A lot of them just stay quiet, but they still get the same harassment and the same stuff going on. And
it's just, but
the difference is, and they are aware that they're a contactee. They know what's going on. They have their own thoughts, ideas. They're holding and retaining information in their own head. And occasionally, and this is probably what gets them tagged, occasionally they talk to somebody else about it. Whether it's a sibling, or a family member, mom, dad, husband, wife, you know, whoever, or maybe just somebody, you know.
Well, exactly. And if you're already on the list because of some history of family involvement with abduction, that they're all that the guys managing the situation are already tracking in you, or a family background of some connection to the intelligence, you know, community or aerospace or related, you know, secret science kind of programs and secret society stuff, all that, that if you're already, you know, if you already are in a family that is on the list, you know, kind of, you know, then also, like you said, then on top of it, you know, in other words, I think it's multiple things. I think I haven't pinpointed any one as kind of the source, but I've come across so many layers of this, and now, like I said, even that the MyLabs run in families. So I'm starting to say, wait a second, this is so layered. It's, you know, everyone says, how is someone chosen to be an abductee? Why do the aliens even choose you? Well, there tends to be a family thing with that, you know. So it stands to reason that the same stuff is going to apply to this as well. And part of it is everyone just says, you know, I think they just don't realize to the degree this subject is managed, controlled, manipulated, that they know what's coming and going from our airspace. I think people just don't realize how big and how entrenched the UFO subject is, to realize that this is such a natural offshoot, you know, that they see it as, oh, you know, how would they know and why would they do that? It's like, well, you have to understand that that they're managing the subject, that they have their hand on it, that they're watching and manipulating it constantly, you know. And that they certainly, you know, are aware of what's coming and going. They're aware of family, past involvement and stuff, you know. And so all these things combined, it's like, oh, well, no wonder this is there, you know, because it's just such a natural extension of the complete program.
You know, because we looked, I mean, I don't know how many, I couldn't actually put a number on how many of we have to have some kind of agency or some kind of military tie in the background. But I do find it interesting that a lot of them that have these low-grade surveillances do have either somebody in their family at one time was in the military. And I found this because a lot of the contactees I have today and Milab experiences I had today, some of them are younger in their 20s and stuff, but like their grandfather was in World War II. And at first I wasn't making the time, but I noticed across the board it's a 70 or 75, you know, I can't say for sure, but it's 70, 75% of them seem to have some family member.
Well,
so I'm wondering if they, if...
Well, I want to caution you about just a military involvement, because we're of a generation that, you know, someone of your and my age, you know, someone now in their 40s or 50s had a parent in the military and was just like, you know, and so, or a grandfather or an uncle, or it's just so common. It's just, we're, you know, we're the baby boomers from a military age. So you have to take that into consideration, and I realized early on, just saying that there was a family background relating to military, I couldn't relate that.
No.
It's too general. But that family background relating to military, did anyone in that background, as a byproduct of those connections and the grandfather, blah, 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 did they get into intelligence work? Did they get into NASA? Did they get into an aerospace company? Did they, you know, some other things start to come up that it's like, okay, there's some extenuating, you know, patterns here that I think may be a fit, other than just to say just someone in the military. I think that's just too general. And again, you know, as time changes, that's going to change, but it still applies to the whole, you know, baby boomer, pre-baby boomer, and post-baby boomer generations.
But well, a lot of the people we found did have some kind of tie in different kind of agencies, but there are a group, I don't know, 20-25% of the rest that just seem to be military. And I was wondering, because the conversation you and I had yesterday got me to wondering about this, because we were talking about the Hills and all, and the thing of it was, is I got to thinking, maybe in the 50s or even the 40s, I don't know when, but maybe somewhere along the line, in one of those hair, nail, fluid samples they were taking from different people, if they couldn't find out who had been in a ship. In other words, when they were doing just general testing, because, you know, when you're in the military, you get a buttload of blood samples taken.
Mm-hmm.
And all kind of glorious shots. I mean,
yeah.
I don't even want to talk about that. When I was at boot camp, it was insane. But you spent like 2 days just getting shots, sandwiching and getting blood taken. It's insane. But and they don't even tell you what they're doing, by the way. They don't even tell you what it's for, what's up. Oh, you got to have these shots. We need your blood. You got to do this. You got to do that. You know. But that's just how it was. But my point is, maybe somewhere along the line, they figured out people who had been on board ships, and from that point forward, they tagged their families.
Well,
so you might have both. You might actually have both.
I mean,
going
that's an interesting theory. I have nothing in my research that points to that. That's an interesting theory. I wouldn't rule out the possibility, but I don't have anything that I can say, you know, points to that, you know. And I really try in my research to stick to the data. And early on, myself and another friend that I was doing this research with at one point, we realized this, you know, kind of this pattern of some family stuff. So we started to include, we have this questionnaire that when I do a full interview with someone, I have this questionnaire of 50, 60, 70, whatever it is, questions. And but the stuff about, you know, is there someone in your family that was in aerospace or in intelligence or, you know, those kind of things are on there. But we added those over time when we started to realize, wait a second, we're getting so many cases where the families had this that we need to just flat out ask, do you have it or don't you? And sure, I interview people that are like, no, I don't have anything. No one in the family was ever any of those things. You know, sure, I have cases like that, but it's such a high percentage that I expect the cases to say yes. I'm actually surprised when they don't have it.
Yeah.
Because we were just getting so much of it. And it seemed just to be beyond chance. Because, again, it wasn't just military, because we were getting that, and we realized, okay, we had to rule out the people just with a military background, because, again, anyone in a particular age range probably had a parent in the military or a grandfather or an uncle or something, you know, so we had to rule that out. But these other, you know, like I said, aerospace and intelligence and NASA connections and CIA, NSA, military intelligence, technology development, breakthrough companies that were spins off from military and aerospace technology development stuff. And, you know, we're just getting so much of it that we're like, whoa, wait. There's just too much of this. This is beyond chance for so much of this to be coming up. And I haven't really put my finger on it. I haven't really sat down. And, you know, it's one thing I've wanted to do in my research is kind of like chart some of this stuff, you know, and start to kind of say, you know, what percentage of the cases have had this and have had that. And, you know, and you know, there's just, there's so much like research that can be done.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, I'm still doing all this on the side while trying to work and everything else. You know, just so everyone out there knows, this is, you know, yeah, I do this research and this investigations and stuff, but it's totally still like under the category of hobby in my life, you know. I mean, I have, you know, regular life, and I, you know, actually I'm currently job hunting, but normally I work full time, and you know, so it's definitely, and even now with job hunting, which anyone who's done that knows that's a full time job. And so even now it takes the back burner, and I go through periods where I spend a lot of time and energy doing it, and I'm talking to a lot of cases, and then I go through periods where I really lay low for a while because I have to focus on other life things, you know. But it's still just something I do on the side, and so I have, you know, I always have ideas for different things I can do with the research, but it kind of tends to be, as I have something come up and I have a new case or a case is referred to me, you know, of course, after I did Coast, I've had a couple of really interesting cases come up and people who emailed me that were extremely interesting. And some of those people I've followed up with, and some of them I still need to. But you know, then all of a sudden that brings up some different ideas. This idea that I've come to realize that my labs, that people have stuff happening, my lab related, you know, meaning covert ops and military involvement, even in some of my cases and some of my new cases had it happen as children back in like the 50s. And so it's like, wait a second, I'm starting to realize that this stuff goes back, you know, into the early 50s. I talked to another, I was at the Bay Area UFO Expo in San Jose here in California, Northern California, this last weekend, and I was talking to a researcher friend of mine that has also looked into my lab thing to a certain degree, and I was telling him how I realized some of my cases and some of my new cases had some stuff happen as kids, and he proceeded to go in detail about this one case of somebody that as a child in 1953 had had something happen. So right now, and this could change any minute, but as of right now, that's as far back as it goes in my research, but that I, you know, that he was telling me about this, and you know, I believe that he's probably correct about that, and he's telling me in detail that, oh yeah, so-and-so, when they were a kid, and they're 5 years old, and they had this happen with their family, and these military guys came in, and blah, 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 and that was in 1953. So it definitely, and so that's like a new thing to realize how far back it's gone. And then for you to bring up that Betty and Barn Hill also had something happen, totally that makes sense. If I have multiple cases that's going back in the 50s, then suddenly it happening in 61 is just, you know, becomes par for the course.
Yeah, you know, we're probably turning half of ufology on their head right now. wait, no, you know what? Let me be fair about this. With the exception of three ufologists, everyone I have talked to endorses the theory, and a couple of them have done it publicly now, so... And actually, I've heard a couple of them talking about it on Coast to Coast.
Well, again, if these experiences are happening in my other cases, and I think as you start to look at yours, I mean, it's just like something I just started to be aware of, and I realized I got to go back and listen to past regressions I did of people. And, you know, I mean, I didn't do regressions. I shouldn't say it, interviews. I said that incorrectly. I'm not a therapist or anything. I don't do regression. But interviews I did of people and listen to their interview tapes. And kind of, you know, I feel like I need to go back and review because this, people have been probably reporting that they had stuff as kids previously and it had just gone past me or I didn't realize the significance of what they were saying. But now I realize, you know, I'm just off the top of my head, the case my friend told me about and two cases I'm aware of, maybe three. So I could say certainly three, maybe four cases going back to into the 50s. Of my lab-related stuff. So then, like I said, if that was already happening, and if I'm starting to just kind of realize that in some cases now, I'm going, well, maybe that's more common. If that's kind of represents, you know, I kind of stumbled onto some stuff, then that probably represents statistically a much bigger number kind of thing. And then suddenly it's like, well, if there's this program of this happening back in the 50s, then it happened to the Hills in 61 was just, they were just part of the regular program. It doesn't make that significant. It just makes them a common case.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone still points to the Hills as, oh, it's the big first big abduction case. Well, no, first off, we know now that abductions go way back, and everybody's got cases, is even working with elderly people, had it happen. You know, it goes way back. But the first that was investigated, that ufology kind of said, whoa, what's this? Yeah, it is kind of the first case where ufology sat up and took notice. But if abductions go way back and if my lab stuff goes way back, then everything that happened to them is par for the course, you know?
And it is. It is. It is par for the course. I don't know. It's getting what time is it? Okay. You know what? Maybe I can sneak this question. I got a couple questions that sit in my email from the time before we were going to do this show.
Okay.
And I promised Laurel I'd actually ask you a question. I said, let me see. We'll do the first one. It says, Melinda, you recently mentioned microwaves being used sometimes on abductees doing rehabs by the cabal. And then it says, to insert voices in their head, how is this done? She wants to know if it's done by implant or go ahead.
Okay, first off, I don't think I said that they're inserting voices in people's heads. I don't think I would say that like that. Now, certainly that's common in mind control research. So there's a whole history of mind control research. There's a whole history of people with experiences with it. There's a conference once a year, again, in the Bay Area called Conspiracy Con, where they have a number of people who talk about it. That's a whole other area that I've purposely kind of sidestepped. The only reason I've had to look at it at all is because of the crossover to my research. Now, the crossover to my research is not that, oh, these people are in these big mind control programs, blah, blah, blah. No. Where I look at it is in the MyLab experiences, the way they get someone to forget about the experience, the way they being the perpetrators, try to cover up, you know, what they're doing, involves certain mind control procedures. They use drugs, fear, and hypnosis, a lot of drugs, a lot of different types of drugs, a lot of fear and hypnosis and post-hypnotic suggestions and stuff to bury the memory and for you to forget, or if they're trying to access certain information that the abductee has that they want or they think the abductee may have about alien agenda, alien motive, or alien technology, or alien psi, or whatever. Any of that they're looking for, they may use some mind control techniques to bring that memory forth in the abductee, and then also then to suppress it. So they pull it out and then cut it off for the abductee, you know, in a way that, you know, then the abductee loses that part or it has it buried. I think these are old techniques. I think they've been doing for a long time. Again, they involve hypnosis, they involve drugs, and they involve a lot of fear. Fear and intimidation under certain drugged states can have a pretty big impact, and I think they've learned how to kind of like split off somebody's personality. Helmut Lammer wrote about this in his book called My Labs, and I highly recommend that. It was kind of a beginning look at it, but I think he pretty much, I don't know if everything he has in there is correct, but I think there's a lot of things in there that probably are, and I think he nailed that on the head. So it's not an area I wish to get into, but I can't ignore that it's a part of the experience, you know. So I've had to look at it just because it is a part of the experience.
Now, what is this question about? Do you prefer your alien abduction versus military abduction?
Do I or do other people?
I think that was directed at you. Or is that just a general question? No, that was directed at you. They just typed back to me. At you.
I'd actually rather have neither, quite frankly.
I wish I'd get paid for them.
Yeah, there you go. There's an idea whose time has come.
I'd be happy to tell them what I know if they just paid me for it. That's probably why I'm resisting so hard.
Show me the love. Really. Boy, isn't that the truth. Well, I can say that in the research, the cases say this across the board, and I think, Joe, you said you've heard this from people, too. So I think everyone who looks into this is hearing this from the cases, which is all the people with my lab experience to say that my lab experiences are harder than their alien ones. And that means harder to live with, harder to deal with, and harder to experience, all the above. And we hear that across the board. And a lot of people who have alien experiences who start to have the military stuff are more reluctant to look at it, dig into it, get further hypnosis about it because of it's difficult on so many levels. And I mean, you know, would I guess the simple answer to your question is, in my own experience, which would I rather have? Yeah, I'd rather have an alien experience.
Yeah, you know, I think I have to agree with that. Especially,
I mean,
now,
hands down. I mean, hands down, because again, I think about the cases that say that, but when they say it, it's I agree with it. It applies to me as well. So, yeah, definitely, my military experiences were much harder and much more frightening than my aliens ones, without a doubt.
Because it just seems, I mean, people talk about, the aliens just do whatever they want. They don't really care. But I got to say, it's different when your own people do. I can kind of half-heartedly understand why E.T. does it, but when it's your own race doing it, you got to kind of go, wait, they could have just asked. Because most of us would be willing to help them.
Well, it seems, too, that the aliens tend to do more maintenance, you know?
Yeah.
The aliens tend to mop up after themselves. They tend to do so much themselves also, to repress it, to... you know, the aliens seem to be concerned with the person's mental well-being at the end of the experience, where they, again, they're like mopping up after themselves. It's like they make sure they're either leaving you disconnected from it, or they're leaving you in a state where you're okay with it. You know, very few people are put back, whether that's in their car, in their house, in their in their bed, in their home, wherever. You know, with the coming back situation, rarely is someone put back in a state of terror, you know. Those are probably few and far between. Usually, if there's fear afterwards, it's fear because of the memory, not because the end of the experience was fearful. Most people are kind of like lulled into this kind of, you know, hey, it's okay kind of thing at the end of the experience, you know, where... they're brought back, and it's very few people, you know, the terror part is usually the beginning of an experience, not the end. And I think that, you know, whether that's alien mind control or the person's mental process of accept, you know, I mean, to what degree that's up to the person or the aliens, like, who knows? But I'm just saying, it's easy to put like lots of labels on this, but yet, do those really apply? All I can say is everyone who's reported both kinds of experiences have across the board said the military ones are worse. And I think you said it when you said, when it's humans doing it to you, and when humans are abusing you, you know you're being abused.
Yeah, it's what it is. But we're gonna go to break, so I'm gonna stop you right there, because we kind of just blew through the first hour.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we just blew through the first hour. But ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna be back in about 10 minutes. When everybody, please stay tuned to UFO on the Cover. I'm your host, Joe Montalva. I'm sitting and speaking with Melinda Leslie about several different things. Stay tuned, and we'll see you in 10. Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to UFO on the Cover. I'm sorry, I was laughing about something. I just stole a moment before we came back from the break. It's a good thing I looked up, or y'all would have been listening to dead air while we were chit-chatting on the phone. So, guys, I'm sorry about that. I'll tell you what, if we go, I got a couple questions pending. Tal, are you around? Because I see your hands up in the virtual auditorium before I start going through the questions I have in instant messages and on Facebook. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, on Facebook and MySpace, you can hit me up there. I see a couple questions on Facebook already, but my MySpace page is open, too. And I know we got quite a few friends there. Okay, Tal, you ready for the mic? I'm gonna go ahead and drop it and let you have it. So, Tal, give us your first name, your location, and you're live and on the air.
Joe, I can't hear him. Am I supposed to? Yeah. Well, like I said, I was speaking actually with a researcher. His name is Sean Atlante, who has worked with a couple of cases just this last weekend at the conference. And I was telling him how I'd realized that that I had this, because I had talked to a case recently, and they had talked about something happening in the 50s, and then I remembered that I had read something in a book, and I'd read of a case, and couldn't quite exactly pinpoint the year. I was having trouble going back and finding the exact section in the book, but it was someone saying she had something as a kid, and it definitely would have been in the 50s. It's just a matter of placing it, whether that's early 50s or later 50s, depending on how old she was and how old she was at the time of writing her book. But it definitely would have been at that time. Because I know that she was in her early 50s at the time of writing the book, and that was a number of years ago. So given that, and depending on how old she was at the time of the experience, but it definitely is squarely back in the 50s. And then, like I said, talking to Sean, he said, well, remember so-and-so, and blah, 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 and he started to go in detail about a case, and that person had something regarding military involvement, but he said that was in 53. So as of just right now, the earliest I'm aware of is 53, but then again, you know, I have to say, and it's worth my looking at some more, in the Roswell story and in the harassment and surveillance of those people, there are, in the book Witness to Roswell, written by Schmidt and Carey, that Don Schmidt and Tom Carey, that they had gone in depth into some of the, you know, experience of the people then. Now, not that anything is pointing to anyone being an abductee. Of course, I wouldn't rule it out, but nothing pointing to that. But just what they went through in their harassment and surveillance stuff, and some of them were basically abducted by military, and that, you know, some of the things that happened back then were so similar. And it struck me reading their book, and I just actually haven't read it in depth. I actually admit I've scammed through it, and I need to really sit down and pore over it, because I was struck at how many similarities there were. And I'm like, wait a second. So that would clearly go back into the 40s as far as the types of procedures, the way in which people were frightened, the way that in which they were threatened, the kind of harassment and surveillance was so similar that it made me go, wait a second, these practices were in place back then. So, and I think it's just, you know, it's kind of standard operating procedure stuff for military, for witness intimidation and that kind of thing, but it hasn't changed in what people are experiencing now, you know, as far as the threats and warnings and the type of harassment kind of stuff. I'm like, wait a second, you know, this is sounding all very similar. And so, again, I can't say that any of those people are abductees, but I suspect that you know, if a case came forward and ended up, instead of being 53, said it was 47, and that they had this happen, I wouldn't be surprised. So, but as of right now, based on that conversation with Sean, that suggests 53. So, and it's hard to say exact years because, you know, people's memory could be faulty about the exact year, you know, and that kind of thing in some cases. So, the one I read in the book maybe didn't say the year, but they said how old they were at the time. And I do remember she said how old she was at the time of writing the book, so I thought, well, I could do the math, and I'd be within a year or two of when it happened, you know. Yeah. So I need to find that part in the book and really, you know, figure that out. But it's just something I just started to realize. So, you know, this isn't like I've done a bunch of research. It's just more or less like, you know, wait a second, I'm aware that this has come up.
You know, Stanton Friedman's going to put up you and I a picture in a hotel room and use it for dart practice. Just so you know ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know I love you, man, but look, y'all are wrong about the Hill case. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
I don't mean,
you know, and I don't think they need to be scared of saying, ooh, the Hills also had a Mylab, because it's like, they, you know, if they had an alien experience, first off, and this is another thing I need to look at with that, and I need to review, you know, the transcript, you know, like you have, and the tapes and stuff, because I really need to kind of go, well, wait a second. Now, not that I could care less about going back and revisiting the Hill case. I don't know that it matters. I mean, obviously, I have my life going back in the 50s, so whether the Hills do or don't at this point doesn't matter. But at the same time, if this is an ongoing program, then them being involved like anybody else, it doesn't diminish the significance of their case. It just says, wait a second, we have a pattern here of which their case supports abduction research. And that's been the point all along, is it supported the research. It wasn't an aberration. It wasn't something so different that it didn't fit. The whole point is to show that abduction goes back at least that far, if not prior. Well, now we know in abduction research it goes back long before that. Because we do have cases of people having alien abduction in the 50s, 40s, 30s. I mean, you know, it clearly goes way back. And so, I mean, you know, without a doubt, people say, hey, you know, happened to me, happened. I mean, I have a case right now. This is so cool. I hadn't even told you about this, Joe.
I'm listening.
Okay. A lady I'm putting you in touch with who's a researcher in your area. I think she lives about 30 minutes from you, if she figured out. So she may have called you, and if not, I'm going to put you in touch with her. But she's working with a couple of my lab cases. And one case she was telling me about was also telling me about abductions running in her family. And the mother found an old family, or had, either found or had, whatever, but discovered in the pages of an old family Bible, like written within the pages of an old family Bible, that the grandmother had talked about two experiences that she thought were like profound spiritual experiences. But the way she talked about it, and this researcher said, Melinda, if you read this, you would absolutely see what's going on here, that she thought she was writing about like two experiences with angels, but when you read them, now I haven't read them, I'm taking this researcher's word for it, but she said when you read them, it's very clearly alien abductions in both cases. And here she's writing about it, and this was like late 1800s. I want to say it was like, I have to even talk to her to find out when. I want to say it was like either 1873 or 1893, and that's a big difference, but 20 years. But in the 1800s, wrote in the family Bible about two abduction experiences. And one of them, she said, you know, this. She's woken in bed by this being in the room. Her and the being went through the painting on the wall above the bed. In other words, like they went out through the wall.
Yeah.
And that when they went through the painting, they went into a technical environment that she says was like a mechanical environment. You know, like a high-tech, you know, as far as how she could relate to it then. And then she talks about this other experience, again, being in her room. But she describes this being with that basically she describes what most people in the field would now call a tall white. And this being comes and imparts a bunch of information to her. And it was like a contact experience with a tall white. And so here's these, you know, and she said when you read both of these, it's clear. Even though the lady is saying, I think she thought one of them might be a ghost or something, and the other, you know, the way, or a spirit of some kind, and the other one was an angel, you know, is what she's thinking. But when you read it, you know, this lady said, as soon as you read them, it's really clear that she's talking about an abduction. And the mother, so the abductee already knew that her mother had experiences, and she has kids that have experience. So we have the abductee and her kids having stuff happen, the abductee and her mom having stuff happen, and then the mom finds the family Bible with her mom's stuff in it. So in other words, you have four generations. And that's not that uncommon. I'm familiar with two other families that have abductions going in for four generations. The abductee, their children, their parent, and the grandparent.
Yeah.
And
back,
so,
yeah.
You know, that's not that uncommon. So, and she said, she goes, Melinda, I have other cases where it goes back generations, or at least we think, but she said this family didn't know until they found this writing that the grandmother had also had it.
Yeah.
So, you know, fascinating, just fascinating. But Yeah. Oh, I forget. What else was being asked? Did I answer the question?
Okay. We got a bunch of them, so we're going to go on to
okay.
Well, hold on. Let me go back to Facebook right quick, because I got one another question from Laura. Where did it go?
I apologize if I didn't fully answer somebody's question.
Yeah, they'll put their hands back up or send it back to us. I wouldn't sweat that any.
Okay.
And yes, Laura, I am reading the notes you sent me about Charles Hall, in case you're listening on Facebook. Or in one of the other venues or in the auditorium. What did I do with that? I just had it in front of my face. I hate when I move stuff when I'm live on the air. It's never a good thing to start moving things around when you're talking. Ah, here it is.
Well, it's like me going off on a tangent and then going, what was the original question?
I went
off on a tangent.
That's the fun of doing radio. And, you know, when I'm hosting, anything's possible. Okay, here we go. It says, what is the exact purpose of low-level surveillance harassment, you know, such as phone, email, snail mail, so on and so forth, and what criteria does the cabal use for targeting specific individuals?
Okay, well, as far as the purpose, I mean, truth is, I can't say. I don't know what their purpose is, but I can say what,
yes.
You know, loosely what it sounds like and what the abductees think is going on. In some cases, it seems purely intimidation, like... you know, it's intimidating, it makes you lay low, it makes you not go forward with your experience, it makes you not, you know, stuff starts to happen and you stop talking to people, you're not talking to a researcher, you know, whatever. So some of it is purely seems intimidating as a control measure. Some of it seems like it's definitely like surveillance, like they're looking for something, like they're looking to see if you've had more stuff happen, are you a case that they want to spend more time on? A lot of people, a lot of abductees just have harassment surveillance stuff, and that may start off really low grade and then go away, or it may pick up a little and then go away. But for some people, that goes away, and they never have the re-abduction scenario. They just have harassment surveillance. They have it happen for a while, and it dies off. I think that they're looking at that abductee as someone they're interested in, but then for whatever reason they decide they're not interested in you, they don't want to spend the money, the time and the energy, you know, whatever. You become a case that's no longer of significance to them for whatever reason. Count your blessings, you know. You know. And so some people just have low stuff and then never have any more. Some people, you know, have low stuff and then it picks up and then more happens and then they have the reabduction. So I think it's their way to start, like, monitoring you. They're checking you out. Are you a case they're interested in? Is more going to happen for you, maybe, you know, if you start to have stuff happen? It doesn't mean it is, because, like I said, for some people it just stops. So I think it's, you know, they're starting to monitor you, and, you know, they may be considering you as someone they're interested in. And like I said, and quite often it's very intimidating. Some of it is deliberate intimidation. I mean, I always talk about the case of the lady that works in Vegas. She was manning a table in Las Vegas where she's a dealer. On two different occasions, a person came in, sat at her table in front of the other customers, you know, in front of the other card players, and warned her away from the subject. Said, I know you're talking to people. I know you're thinking of going public. I know you're talking to researchers. We're telling you not to or else, you know. And she had that happen twice. And but I have other cases like that. I have another abductee who was speaking at a conference, was just starting to kind of go public and include this stuff in her talks. And she was approached at the conference. There was a point, I think actually she was either getting on a van to take her to the hotel. I think that doesn't make sense. This conference would have been a hotel. So I'm thinking maybe it was the van to take her back to the airport. Kind of a thing, and anyway, someone got on this van and proceeded to, you know, threaten her away from the subject, so that kind of thing. I actually have a number of cases of this, people being threatened and warned face-to-face, sometimes where they work, sometimes in just public settings, often in front of other people, you know, they're just blatant right there in your face, they don't care if anyone hears, you know, and this has happened to a number of people. And so that's obviously, you know, threatening, warning, intimidation. In some cases, some people just have low-grade harassment surveillance and say, gee, it's not scaring me. I don't know what they're interested in. I don't know why I'm having so much black helicopter stuff happen. I would say, you know, do the helicopters have equipment on them? People report forward-looking infrared, ball cameras, boom mics, you know, this kind of thing. Are they looking for something? Are they looking for a signal, for a technology, for a residual effect in your environment? Quite often these helicopters come the same day or the day after an alien experience. So in that case, you can pretty much say, well, they're looking for something.
Yeah, they are.
You know, so when that comes up, then you're like, okay, well, they are looking for something. Does the phone stuff pick up the day after you've had an alien experience? You know, so it's all kind of depends on the timing, depends on what happens. You know, there, sometimes I think it's about intimidation. Sometimes I think it's just about monitoring and surveillancing you. And, you know, and
just
you know, that,
you
that they're looking for something.
I think that's part of it, just letting you know, hey, look, we're here. How you doing?
And there was a second part to that question.
Oh, now, don't ask me, because that includes
the screen.
Well, we'll come back to it in a little while.
Well, there was a second part to it I was going to answer.
Yeah, I'm rebooting that computer. When it comes up, we'll come back to it. Now, a friend of ours, New York Lily, iCar's New York director, she sent you a question. Where is this? It says, have the people doing MILABS ever used remote viewing for abductees? Okay, that's kind of strange. But
well, you're not necessarily going to know they're remote viewing you, so... but I can say that some abductees in their experiences have had to remote view, have been literally like tested for it, you know, within the context of their experience. So that it comes up that in the experiences where those involved in this, you know, perpetrators, whatever, the MILAB people, when they're looking at an abductee's psi abilities. There's sometimes they test you for that. They put you through little war game scenarios, or they'll sit you at some computer and ask if you can make whatever on the screen move with your mind or something. Those kind of things have all come up. But one of the things that has come up is where they're being given sheets of paper. Now, this will make sense to people who are trained in remote viewing. But if you don't know, it's you have sheets of paper, and you go through a series of protocols, and you put the information in a particular order on the sheets of paper. And even though there's some different methods, they all involve some phase of that. You know, basically, they're all similar in that regard. And some of the abductees are told to look at a location or something and to draw it, sketch it, label it, you know, that kind of thing. So that kind of thing has come up for quite a few people. And so that they're interested if the abductee remote views, do they have that ability? You know, that kind of thing. That has absolutely come up.
Yeah, we just did a show about remote viewing 2 weeks ago. A couple of good remote views. It was an interesting show. I'm always, you know, back and forth with remote viewing. So one minute I'm like, yeah. One minute I'm like, no.
Yeah.
It's kind of like hypnosis to me. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, it's a useful tool. Sometimes I'm like, God, get it out of the field.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Well, it's definitely a useful tool. I mean, I've been formally trained, you know, purposefully. I, you know, sought it out, half out of just in casual interest, and half out of because it was coming up related to my research. I wanted to know more about it, and I've had training from a couple different people, you know, it's a very useful thing. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it is. It is. Matter of fact, one of the ladies that was on with the remote viewers, she actually teaches it. No, it serves a purpose. It's just some people are legitimate and some people are morons, and that's as politely as I can say that.
Yeah, well,
that's
apply to everything.
Yeah, well, it's the same you know. Thing with hypnosis. You got some good people out there doing some good work, and then you got some people you got to go, okay, what kind of crack are you smoking?
Yeah.
You know, some of the leading, you know, because people send me stuff, they send me copies of the regressions, they'll mail it to me on the email or send it to me an audio tape, which I'm really grateful for. I mean, I appreciate it.
Oh, there's a lot of people out there who are doing way too much leading,
you know. Oh, yeah. It's like
I mean, you can't help but do a little, and everyone, you know, if anyone says, I don't lead at all, they're full shit, because you can't help. It's a natural thing to sometimes do it a little bit, but there are a lot of people doing a lot of it.
Well,
and that's
a shame, because
I have a real beef with that, too. That really pisses me off.
Yeah, because it gets kind of crazy. Now, I'm going to let Tal back up in a minute, because he was harassing me about coming up and, I guess, another question or a second. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll let him tell us, so hold on. Tal, you can have the mic, man.
Hi.
all of this, over the whole thing, did you have any areas in the events or whatever that could be like high strangeness or something in that nature that you just have no idea as to explanations in it?
Yeah, I mean, sure, that applies to the abduction subject. A lot of it can get real high strangeness, you know, that stuff that doesn't fit. I admit, when I work with a MyLab case, I kind of am looking for things within certain parameters, and I tend to only take on cases as far as if someone's referred to me or I meet someone at a conference or whatever, I'll talk to them, and I'll tend to only pursue the ones that kind of match, you know, or at least a certain percentage of what they say matches. Granted, I have people come up to me, and I have people call me on the phone and being referred to me on the phone who are mind control victims and probably don't have abduction or have it to a lesser degree and, you know, currently are clearly, to me anyways, going through some kind of mind control program or to the best. Now, again, I'm not a researcher of that, so I won't even make that determination other than it you know, they smell of being that, you know, suggest that. So then those people, I tend to refer them on to a group or organization that does that kind of research. Years ago, I worked with a psychotherapist and would refer people to her. And people would call me who I said, you know, would say have other issues. Occasionally, I have people call me that are, to me, a little unbalanced. And again, I used to refer them on to a therapist. And I still do some of that. I mean, I definitely do that. Luckily, I don't get as many of those. I'm mostly interested in the cases that are real down to earth. I want a person to be really credible. I want them to have evidence. You know, for a while, I wasn't really giving the time of day to any case that I didn't think didn't have evidence for what was going on. You better have some kind of physical evidence, you know. But, you know, I'll talk to people. It's just the cases I pursue and I want to do further interviews and stuff of are usually pretty solid, you know. And that's just because I get so much, I can kind of pick and choose. And, you know, and also because I do this on the side, you know, and out of my own pocket and everything, I get to pick and choose, you know, so I do. And I'm only going to take the time to really pursue something when I think, wow, this is a really good case. But, I mean, I've got some really good cases. I mean, tons of evidence for their alien stuff, tons of evidence for their MyLab stuff, you know, rock-solid individuals, highly credible backgrounds. I mean, I am just, you know, I've got some good cases, so I'm able to pick and choose. And, you know, occasionally some stuff comes up in the MyLab stuff that is way out there. Again, that same lady I was talking to, I'm going to put Joan in touch with, I had met a case that she's now working with. I don't want to go into any detail because I certainly, no one knows I was going to bring this up, but this, it's a family that has some very unusual stuff happening, but quite a bit of what's happening is along the lines of what happens to other people. It's just more of it. So maybe the strangeness is just, well, they've had this same kind of stuff happen, but it's been taken to a higher level with them. And that's curious, you know, but not outside of the realm of possibilities. And so I do get some stuff that is real, you know, falls, that's more intense. But again, you know, it's like, does that case meet a bunch of the other criteria for stability and credibility and everything else? And therefore, even though this one part might seem really extreme or way out there, everything else fits. So that makes me more, you know, interested in the one part that is real different or the one part that's more extreme, because I'm willing to go, okay, you know, this is a credible case, so what is this, you know? And is it that their interpretation of it is wrong, or is that they've just got something more intense happening, you know? And, I've had people, there's, you know, we're talking about alien abduction stuff, so high strangeness is pretty common, you know, for sure.
Yeah, it is. It's the person who just sent me all these really cool black helicopters. All right. Oh, it's Christian. Hey, Christian.
Like photos?
He's showing me stuff. He's our Australia national director down there.
Uh-huh.
And he's been having harassment with black helicopters. He was sending me something to give me an idea
of
what they look like.
Email me.
And I'll send it.
Yeah, tell him to email me.
Chris, if you listen, I can be emailed
through my website, so.
I don't know if because he's usually in a virtual auditorium when he's on, so I don't know if he's online. But if you're listening, hey, look, if not, I'll catch you in the next couple of days. I think that's why Todd was trying to hog up all your time because he wanted to make Christian jealous and torturing. He got to talk to you. our directors are very competitive. It's a good thing, by the way. They who's going to prove what first, and that's a good thing. They keep me hopping, I'll tell you that. They're always harassing me about something. One of them wrote me about something I said on one of the radio shows, and I said, well, tell them to spend some time in the Cairo Museum. You used to be able to look at all the hieroglyphs online, but I noticed they have sharply cut down what you can actually see. Now, they've got photos of every temple and every temple and every ruin in Egypt in the museum. They used to let you access them all via the internet, but I noticed lately they've really curtailed how much you can look at, which is kind of sad because there's some interesting stuff, and some of it's online. You can find it here and there.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know, greys and UFOs and helicopters and stuff like that and hieroglyphs, but we don't really know what those were. We don't even know what they really represented. You know, it could have been any damn thing.
Yeah.
They just look.
I mean,
like
there's some images that are highly, you don't know for sure.
Yeah, I like. To be honest with you, all of that stuff I liked the most was about 500 years ago in the Middle Ages. Now, there's a lot of artwork that came out of the Middle Ages on that would definitely resemble contact. Quite dark too. But
I keep thinking of that painting of the guy shielding his eyes, looking at the sky, and the dog next to him barking. Yeah, it's one of the famous Madonna pictures, but in the background is the guy looking up. It's obviously a UFO, and it's lit up and has things sticking out of it, and it's the guy's looking up at it and the dog's barking. I love that.
Yeah, there's that one, and then there's the one Mary sitting on a rock or something, and up in the right corner there's like a shooting star going by with a guy inside of it.
Yeah.
And those you just gotta kind of go, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
First off, let's be honest. Anything flying in the sky, more than 200 years ago is very suspect.
Yeah.
When you start seeing ancient cultures, drawing pictures and writing letters and,
The whole Hindu Vimana thing, they have this whole entire culture and structural belief system and everything based upon these advanced flying, machines that, and that were at war out in space and stuff, and it's just phenomenal. I mean, it's just like, and it's probably all just what it seems,
Guys on Facebook, English, my Spanish is limited, and my Italian is even more so. It says, hello, Joe, and then it's, and I think that's Spanish, and then it says, Mr. Montaldo. I'm like, what? I'd have to actually go translate it. Guys, English. Oh, Lord, I think that's funny. I got to say, though, I am learning things because, a lot of people on Facebook don't speak English.
Yeah.
But they have an interest in this field.
Yeah.
And they're wanting to talk, so, I do spend some days, like one day a week I'll go do just talk with friends like that, translate it. Use the Google Translator. Which is nice. It's interesting. You lose something because I don't think the translators are all that accurate. But
but you can get the gist of it,
You get a good idea of what's going on. Yeah, one of your friends called me the other day. We were going to talk last week, and then she got busy. We were going to talk Sunday, and I got busy. So hopefully one day this week we'll connect. It's everybody's just, for being an economy the way it is and the money being so tight, everybody I know is just ungodly busy.
Yeah,
and
I know.
And in ufology, it's even worse. There's just a lot of stuff. Well, that's true. You're going to be in Laughlin this spring, right? What, February?
Oh, yeah. I'm speaking at the International UFO Congress
February. Heard of that? Y'all better get out there. I expect there to be
folks, you've got to go to this conference. It's 8 days long. It's an eight-day-long conference. Now, you don't have to go for the whole thing. You can go towards the beginning of the week, towards the end of the week. I happen to know that I'm going to be speaking on Thursday afternoon, so towards the end of the week. So try to come hear me. But Niara and I are doing like a presentation.
You're
going to
be at a whole
Niara Isley and I,
Thursday.
And I'm going to talk for an hour, and she's going to talk for an hour, And like I said, that's Thursday afternoon. But the conference is a week long. It always starts with lectures and stuff on the first Sunday and ends on the following Saturday. And it's just, they always have just the top-notch people, you know, in the world. They always try to have whatever the biggest breaking news is in ufology. They cover every aspect of it. They cover the contactee abductee thing quite heavily, and then they have a day where it's all about the conspiracy and the history stuff, and they have a day that'll be all about the technology part of it. And then, like I said, they always do the whatever the biggest breaking stories are, and it's really just top notch. And I really recommend if someone's going to try to go for the full week, because it's that full week long experience.
Yeah,
if
you can go, it is better to go for the week. It really
Just to be with like-minded people the whole week. It's not just all the amazing presentations you see in here, because it's all the top people, you know, but it's the conversations you have in the hallways and the people you go have dinner with and the conversations over dinner and lunch, you know, every day and breakfast and conversations in the hallway. And, you know, you learn as much information outside of the lecture room as you're learning in the lecture room. And it's just and a chance to really get to know some of these, you know, the speakers and the presenters and the bigger names in ufology. A lot of them attend the whole week, or at least for a number of days. You'll have opportunities to have meals with them and get to know them in a more personal way other than just their lectures. It's just, you know, just to be immersed in it for a week with like-minded people who have the same interests, I just can't recommend it enough. That the website for that is UFOCongress.com. That's real simple, UFOCongress.com. They're just now starting to post who the speakers are going to be. They'll constantly be added to, because when all's said and done, there's like 30 speakers or something. So they're just starting to get them listed on the site. But a few of them are up there already, and there'll be more added.
I know a few of the shows will be promoted. I don't know which ones, but I know Kelly and I will probably be promoting it, because Richard will probably be speaking there.
Richard is speaking.
Oh, yeah,
he is.
That's right. You told me that. And so I imagine Karen will be promoting it pretty heavy, and she's on the board. So I imagine we'll see it on her show. You know, a lot of the guests coming on and stuff like that. Usually February, I stick to abduction. So.
Yeah,
it's I like doing abductions in the cold months, January, February, March. It seems to stick better for some reason. I don't know why, it just does. It's kind of a weird thing. Maybe it's, you know, everybody's been locked in their house and it's cold and it's dark.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it does seem to hit home more. I get way more comments in the winter on that kind of stuff than I do in the summer.
Mm.
But summers are good for sightings and things like that. People like to get outdoors, do a little camping, hang out. That's why July is still the busiest UFO month in the United States. I can't say in the world, but I can say in the United States.
Well, I'm excited because at the conference this last weekend, I met up with some guys I knew before, and I kind of met some more. But anyways, long story short is a group of young guys that live here in the L.A. area that all have night vision goggles, and I'm a big fan of going out and sky watching with the night vision goggles. I've been very fortunate to have some very, very good sightings with night vision goggles. Very good. And so I'm so excited because they're like $3,000 or $3,500 apiece for a pair. And so I've not been in a place to be able to get them right now. Of course, if anybody wants to buy me any, I'm open to the idea. Put that out there. But I haven't been in a place to be able to afford them myself. But these guys have a couple of pairs, and so I'm so glad to learn of some people that live locally that have, and they have the really, really good kind, you know, the real high-quality ones. So
yeah.
I hope to be doing a lot more going out with them and skywatching now that I've connected up with them. And because I love doing that.
It is.
That's another thing I recommend. If anyone hears of a group that's getting together with night vision goggles, I mean, not just any. They have to really be the good military-grade ones. But if someone's coming to your area and is doing that, go out and do it, because it is so rewarding. You know, like I said, I've done it 6 times. I've had great sightings every time.
Yeah, I got to say, you know, on my Facebook page, I posted up a bunch of photos of places we actually go to go skywatching. What I did is some of the sunsets and some of the sunrises, I actually you know, put the posters of those pictures. They're really gorgeous places, too. But I do like to go skywatching. Matter of fact, me and my wife and my daughter just went a couple of, it was about 2 months ago, we went and spent the night out on the beach in Pensacola, actually on Santa Rosa Island, to be more precise.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought out the tent, set it up, got out there underneath it, because it's beautiful out there in the summertime. You got the nice breeze lapping off the Gulf, the emerald green water splashing on the shores. It's nice and cool in the evenings out there, probably about 75, 78 degrees, and the wind's blowing steady.
Mm-hmm.
So it's comfortable. You can sit out there and enjoy it. And we see some hairy, scary, wild stuff out there sometimes. Sometimes we don't see anything.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just see, you know, beautiful skies, and that's about
yeah.
it. It's also a great place to go watch the meteor showers or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. You can come up here.
Well, I think to go out there with the night vision goggles is really
Oh, yeah. You know,
really
I've never taken a set out there. I've got a night scope, but I don't think I've ever taken a set out there for any reason.
It really helps if they're the bifocal kind, because you're going to get a wider field of view and really high quality ones, because the higher quality, the better you're going to do
with
it.
You want Gen 3 or Gen 4, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, you know.
Yeah.
And I tell you, it's phenomenal. I mean, you know, you'll see satellites and shooting stars and lots of satellites, lots of shooting stars. You'll see every kind of plane, and you know, but you get used to all those things, and you rule out all the knowns, and then you get these things that are just doing advanced acrobatics, you know, or are just going so fast. Like the, you know, satellites go real slow and they're steady. These things will just zip around. I mean, when you have a good sighting, it's really.
Is 7 seconds from arch to arch, from one side of the sky to the other sky.
That's right.
I said something like that. I don't know if it's right around there.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's nice about now is you got the JPL site, so you can actually go. We take our laptops with us sometimes, because down here we can use airport monitors. So between the JPL site, we can track every satellite in the sky live.
Mm-hmm.
And we can track, with the airport monitor, we can track every airplane flying within a 100-mile radius of
mm-hmm.
where we are. So with the two, you can instantly rule out anything.
But you also know when you see these, because
yeah.
the satellites are so obvious. I mean, the satellites are slow, steady, you know, they're so obvious that when you see these things will, you know, a satellite to go the width of your fist in the sky will take like a minute and a half to go just the width of your fist in the sky. These things will go there and back in 1 second, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, they're just like zoom, zoom. The acrobatic stuff that they do, or a squadron. You'll see a bunch flying in formation, you know, like a V formation or a circular formation of multiple things. You know, it's just phenomenal. And I recommend it, because, you know, there's much more going on out there and stuff flying around than you've realized. And the thing is, you know, occasionally you'll see a bunch of them up there, and you'll see a bunch of military jets, and you go, huh, isn't that interesting? You know, I mean, they obviously, you know, when you see the military jets up there and then you see these other things, you go, oh, there's, you know, the military jets are there because of the other things, you know, but that becomes obvious. So it's like the blinders are off completely when you start going out with night vision goggles.
Oh, yeah. They got, see, this question just came in the room I seen. It says, hi, Melinda, have you heard of an EMP targeting just one specific individual's home, making their entire electrical system go berserk for 2 hours, yet not hurting anything? I've heard of weird stuff before.
Yeah. I wouldn't rule that out. I know someone who had something like that happen with her car's electrical system, where she thinks in her harassment and stuff that they fried her car's electrical system, and given everything going on at the time, it does seem to be related to her story.
Hey, Ollie, do you know if you've got the new kind of digital meters at your house, or do you have one of those old spinning fish? No?
What kind of meters? What?
Yeah, well, the new digital meters you can screw with remote control. I just found that out a couple
of
times.
Oh, meters, yeah.
Yeah, on your electric meters, a lot of people still have the old-fashioned ones that spin, and there are gears that track the electricity as it goes
yeah.
by. But they got new digital ones, and which are actually not as accurate as the old ones. I'm not sure why they did this, but still, they use them. But from what I heard recently, you can actually control them. You can make them do things with certain gadgets.
Well, I mean, if they're doing something like, for instance, if you think your house's electrical system was fried like that with an EMP or something, was there anything leading up to that? You know, that seems like a pretty severe form of harassment, you know, that they're wanting you to get the message, you know. So what led up to that? Did you have a lot of low-grade surveillance stuff? Did you have some threats and warnings? Were you approached in public? You know, I would be curious what else is happening around that, because if that's a standalone event, you probably just had some kind of power surge thing. Power surge, electrical storm, something may have caused it, and it may not be related. If it's related, they're sending you a signal, and they're probably going to have ramped up with a bunch of activity before they've done that. You know, there's going to be warnings and threats and a whole bunch of stuff before they take some, you know, more drastic action to get the point across.
It does sound like, okay, excuse me there, dog. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. My dog was in my lap. he's an evil dog. He's like Satan's chihuahua. They've heard him on the air before. He manages to get himself on the air from time to time.
What's your dog's name?
That's Charlie I had in my lap.
What's his name?
It's Charlie and Max. I got a
Charlie?
I got an 8-pound chihuahua and a 4-pound chihuahua. And they're insane dogs, by the way. But they want to be famous just like everybody else. So they want to get on the show. I know we're getting close to running out of time here, guys.
Yeah.
So, and I know Melinda's got things she's going to be doing, and I'm not going to get into what, because y'all don't need to know. Y'all weird.
I'm going to a local MUFON meeting.
She had to use that curse word on
that curse word.
She just had to use that curse word.
Well, I could get even worse and tell them who's speaking.
Actually, I've been so nice to MUFON lately. They're probably wondering if the end of the world's coming.
No, our local, you know, our local Orange County, California MUFON.
Yeah, actually,
really
I
fantastic.
Hear good things about the group down.
Oh no, they're fantastic. They're a great group of people, and they have speakers every month, and they bring in all the top notch people in the field. And they don't, you know, they'll cover every subject fairly, and they're really great, and they really put on a nice professional event. Yeah.
Well, always, if your house is struck by EMP, none of your electronics would have worked afterwards. So more than likely, they did something with your meter or cut the power to the line itself, or maybe
yeah,
one of the transformers.
Some kind of power surge or something.
EMP destroys.
That's true. You would never be able to use it again. You'd have to throw everything out.
Well, guys, Melinda's always a blast to have on. I forgot what I was going to say there. My brain went I love when it does that when I'm live. But, you know, we can move on to something else. Now, so you're definitely going to be at Laughlin this year. And, guys, she was just on Coast. Go catch the interview. It was a good interview. I caught it myself. We didn't even talk about the article. That's the whole reason I brought you on.
For what?
I wanted to talk about your article you wrote.
Oh, yeah. Well, everyone can go read it. We can talk about it again in the future.
Right.
But everyone, it's on my website. Well, it's on your site.
Yeah, it's on
so
the website,
it.
And it's on both places. And what I'll do is maybe in January, February.
If you go to my site, you also get to see some artwork, though. I don't think you got that on yours.
My website is... I hear how you are. I see how you treat me like a stepchild.
Yeah.
Actually, I haven't seen the artwork, but she told me who did it or who put it together, so I'm pretty sure it looks pretty good. And y'all, but you can link, there's all kind of ways to link in. Her sites are linked all over the place from us. So, even matter of fact, in a virtual auditorium,
yeah,
right
the,
now, there's
the article has a longer name, but the short name, so you'll know you're reading the right thing. My paper is called Rehab's Not My Labs. But anyways, go in and read that, please, because it's kind of my position paper on where I am right now with the research. And
now, guys, it's not a short article, so, you know, be prepared to go read.
Yeah.
When she first sent it to me, I was watching it fill up on my computer. What the hell is she sending me, a book?
It's like 12 pages, you know.
It's a good article.
12 pages in Word, you know.
And you should check that out, and then you should catch the Coast to Coast interview. And, of course, I think I have 4 or 5 of our interviews posted in the old archive, so you can catch them up there. But, guys, I have to tell y'all, do me a favor. You know, you want to keep the station ad-free, donate to the station, because if not, I'm going to start putting ads on, guys. Because, you know, I got to pay the bills. That's how it is. Well, Melinda, it's been great having you on tonight. I had a blast. Hopefully I'll get to come see you in Laughlin. Maybe we can get Steve and put some pressure on Steve and let you come out to D.C. this year.
When he had me was, whatever that was, 3 or 4 years ago. So
you ever notice? He don't
know. It's time. It's time, Steve.
He don't bring many of y'all West Coasters on. I think because he's an East Coaster, he's got a thing on y'all West Coasters. He goes to Hawaii now. He brings Saul over there and all from way out in Hawaii. But I see he leaves him people in California alone. Y'all must have done him something. All right, I'll behave. He'll start writing me letters.
Yeah, yeah, I was going
to
say.
He'll be like, what are you talking about, man? He's a blast. I always have a lot of fun when I'm around him.
Steve.
That man
great.
Got more energy than should even be humanly allowed. That's insane. Now, he'll probably be out at Laughlin. He usually goes.
Oh, yeah, he's always there.
He usually goes. You're going to drive out to Vegas this year for Ryan's conference?
Good question. Let's just say I want to go really bad, but I don't know how I'm going to be able to afford it, so we got to think about that, because I'm dying to go, and every year I say I'm going to go, and every year it comes up where I can't afford it, but this year I'm more broke than usual, so we'll see if I can...
By the way, Colleen told me to tell you hi earlier, and I forgot. She's in the virtual auditorium, and she told me to tell you hi. Where'd you meet her? In Sedona.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she said.
Oh, man, do we have some stories to share about that. Oh, boy.
Oh, Lord. Thank God we're going off the air. Don't tell them what them two was talking about. They are evil together. down there in evil Sedona, Arizona, no less. Oh, man, we don't need to go there. I'm telling you, y'all tell me, it's the peace, love, and light capital. My butt, I've been down here. I'm telling you, that's some bad energy.
Oh, no. Sedona's wonderful. Don't listen to him, everybody. Sedona is beautiful.
It's beautiful. No, I have to say it is beautiful. I did think it was one of the more beautiful. Expensive as hell, but it wasn't
beautiful. Not even that. Not even.
What do you mean? Everywhere we ate, the hamburgers were like $12.
How it is everywhere right now. At least where I live, that's how it is everywhere.
Well, that's because y'all are on the West Coast. We live in the South where we don't do those kind of insane things. That's why y'all pay 40 cents a gallon more for gas than we do.
Sedona is wonderful and an amazing place for science.
It is a beautiful place, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on down there. And I pick on them a lot, but I have several friends down there that do a lot of different things, from alien stuff to a lot of the New Age stuff that they're into. And I give them a hard time, but, they're still friends of mine. I can't be that bad. Well, Linda Joe, I'll tell you thanks for being on. I had a blast tonight. Hope to see you. Hope to talk to you soon.
Sure.
Hopefully, I'll see you out in Laughlin, because I'd really like to go. I always have a good time when I go out there, but it always costs
you. You got to come. And it's going to be a great conference this year. I know they're really trying also to have people that don't get out and speak much. They have a lot of new speakers this year, which is exciting. A lot of new and different things.
Maybe we'll do a lot.
That's a risk because they're unknown, and in this economy, they're not people who are definitely a big draw. But it'll be new people, new information, and a few standards,
probably about 11 people. That's it. That's Reddit. And but I know it's getting out now. I talked to him and Karen about 2 weeks ago, and they said the books were going out and everything was going fine, and it's available, and they shipped out all the back orders and stuff, and everything was caught up, and Richard said all the editing and everything was done, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. Next time I talk to him, I'll be harassing him about where my copy is.
Yeah.
Hey, man, come on. Yeah, I need the book, man.
Tell him I need one, too.
I need the book, man. I said, don't make me have to wait a year until it goes on sale. I keep telling him I'm poor. He just don't listen. Maybe that's what we'll do. We'll set up a Laughlin kitty. What y'all think, guys? A Laughlin kitty. But anyways, we're going to get out of here. I want to tell everyone thank you for tuning in to UFO Undercover. I hope everyone enjoyed Melinda Lizard Night. Again, you can catch all of her websites. She's linked all across all of her sites, so you can find her there easy. She has her own website up and down. You should check out the article, the Coast to Coast interview, and try to get out to Laughlin this year. Until next week, have some fun, people. Smile. Enjoy your lives a little bit. See y'all next Wednesday. Oh, Lord.
WPRN 105.3 FM, New Orleans.